Welcome back, everyone. This is Franco Premier League Show. We're back, Martin, finally.
Yeah, we're
back after some news that shocked the whole world. مش حتى our sport, but the entirety of any sports fan. When the news of the Super League broke out. Sorry, we couldn't put out anything at the time, but we were so shocked and we didn't know whether it was gonna proceed or no. Luckily and thank God it did not. I thought even if it didn't go through, that we'd give it just a thought. Yeah, Martin, you know, and we had to talk about it. But first, I want to welcome you, Martin, for being back. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's discuss. طبعاً يعني football teams بالذات in the Premier League were forced to back out of this deal. At the time we're recording, طبعاً everyone knows about the stories, or everyone knows the behind stories, or everyone knows which teams pulled out first, which teams continued to fight for it. At the time we're recording, I think there's still Barca, Juve, and Real Madrid. They still didn't withdraw. But, I mean, they're going to withdraw eventually, but they're just trying to weather the storm.
Well, I think Florentino Perez is still hoping that they might work something out with the backlash that they got from the fans and the media. It looks to be super difficult for any club to pull it off, really, without getting in a lot of trouble, especially when we're talking about big clubs, a lot of fans, a lot of passionate fans. It's going to be difficult, Yanni. But, you know, any money is a big incentive, so you never know. Maybe they'll work something out with the UEFA. So I don't know, any. For now, it's off the table, but and knowing Florentino Perez, I don't think he's going to stop pushing for it as much as he can. The thing is with the problem is that with these owners or these clubs right now, this was a no-brainer decision, really, because you're an owner, you have this club as a business, as an investment. You want to get money. They don't really care about the concept of football, which is the big issue here. Yani, for them, it's a clear and obvious decision. We're getting money. We're gonna be getting money consistently, regardless of how good or bad we are.
It's like a math equation for them. Yani,
You don't need to even invest in the team anymore. You're just floating in the league, in a super league where you're getting 500 mil every season, whether you're good, whether you're bad, whether you're playing good, whether you're playing bad.
At least 500. Yani, they didn't even talk about the broadcasting money that they were gonna get.
Yeah, fine. As an owner, if you're it's just a business. Yeah, you want to get money, you want to get profit out of your investment in a club, and that's just a very easy way of doing it. Yeah, they don't care about the cons; they just care about the pros, which is money, and that's enough for them. It's a big issue, yeah, obviously. I'm glad it didn't go through, because it would have really just ruined the whole sport for me. Most people are not fans of football can look at it and think this is not a bad thing, this is a good thing, because it's like the kind of like the Americanized way of doing things, where you have one league where you have a lot of teams, you have a lot of good teams, and you just get to watch big games all the time. The problem with that, just from that point of view, not even considering anything else, is that now it takes away the competitiveness of the games. And it's not really special anymore when you have Barcelona versus I don't know, Man City every other week. You have Madrid facing United. You have I don't know, Chelsea facing Juventus, and it's happening all the time. It's just not going to mean anything. It's just going to be like a preseason friendly tournament at this point, because even if you lose, you're not losing anything really.
No, there's an NBA, but خلاص, يعني all 30 franchises play 82 games, and they're the 30 best teams that ever do it in the entire world, and all talents just go there.
Yeah, man, it's just that it's gonna wipe, you know, it's gonna wipe out a lot of teams. And I know Florentino Perez suggested that if the big clubs have a lot of money, then it means they can spend a lot of money buying the players from the smaller clubs. But so that's not the any smaller clubs are not making players or not developing players and having academies and. Or maybe some obviously.
Martin, I lost you for a second. I lost you for a second. Can you say that again?
Yeah, I'm saying that I know Florentino Perez suggested that if the big clubs are wealthy, then it means that they can spend more money buying the talents from the smaller clubs. But that's not really how it works, because the smaller clubs are developing players, they're scouting players. They're bringing up talents to be able to compete, to have a good team, and that's the essence of the sport, really. And yes, a lot of these talents eventually would want to go to bigger clubs or challenge for bigger titles. But I said, now you're going to make that the only option, really, because all the big teams are together in one.
A lot of people are failing to realize is that stories like Leicester and West Ham this season, خلاص, they're not going to happen again. يعني, because, they won't be able to keep their players. And even if they win the Premier League, it's meaningless at this point, doesn't it?
It's meaningless, and it's not even going to be enough money, really. Like, even though the Premier League brings a lot of money, a lot of broadcasting money, and a lot of just a lot of benefits. Yeah, I mean, the Super League is just like a double or triple or whatever, however much it's gonna be. It's gonna be a lot more money, and it's gonna require nothing in return. Really, you don't need to develop your team. You don't need to buy good players. You don't need to make sure you have a good team that's playing well and getting results. Because even if you end up being the 20th in the league, you're still getting more money than anyone else that's not in the Super League. I feel like it kind of makes it pointless at that point. I understand why some people are trying to say that it's going to be entertaining and it's going to be good from a viewer, from viewing point of view. But I still think it's not going to be competitive, and that's going to make it not even good to watch, regardless of being.
It's like, fuck you, we're getting money either way.
And you're just watching us training pretty much. You don't even need to break a sweat.
There is no relegation.
There's no incentive to win.
Unless BFM, someone wants to secure a move to whoever wins the Super League regularly.
Yes, why should they care? It doesn't matter, really.
But here's the thing, and I don't want to keep bashing the Super League and drift away from how poorly UEFA is currently handling a lot of issues, like racism, for example. And apart from that, because it's a big issue in football, also the new format that they just came up with for the Champions League, I think it's like 36 teams now.
Team has to play 10 games,
which means that it's more games for teams, which means it's a lot more rotation, which means it's a lot more fatigue. on already a very, very congested schedule, بالذات for teams in the Prem.
Yeah, no, UEFA is definitely not the good guy here.
In my opinion, it's just two heist teams, pretty much. It's just two sets of criminals, and each one of them trying to tell you, ah, oh, by the way, we're the good guys here. We're trying to save the sport. And at the end of the day, they just care about the fucking money. They don't care about you and me. They don't care about who wins the Champions League. They don't care. They're just in it for the moolah. That's and it's sad, and I hate to say it, but this is the reality we're facing right now.
It is sad, but that's been happening for years now. Owners are becoming more investors and businessmen, not really people who care about their clubs. We've been seeing it for a while now, and it's been increasing exponentially because people realize that they can make a lot of money out of football because of how passionate the people are, like the proper football, the passionate fans. They're going to be spending money to watch your team, to buy merchandise, to support the team in any way. And when you have control of big clubs, like big international clubs like United, like Real Madrid, like these clubs that are just, they have support all around the world, very easy to make money out of that. And it's been proven time and time again, like even with United, when the team hasn't been performing very well, still the revenue and the club's worth still been up there because of just how popular the club is around the world, especially in places like Asia and like South America and places like that. So it attracts businessmen who want to put some money in and just get profit out of it. They're not really in it to because they have any connection with the club. They're just in it because they want the profit. They want more money. When you offer them an opportunity to get more money without being invested in the club at all, really, you don't need to do anything. You just need to be there. Just play your games and you're getting your money regardless of whether you win or you lose.
I think biggest examples for that are Stan and the Glazers. They don't care about what the team does on the pitch. They don't care where they are because fuck you, we're getting money regardless. Because they know the size of a club like Arsenal. They know the size of a club like Man United. Hundreds of millions of people buy the kits. Hundreds of millions of people tune in on TV week in, week out to see how they perform. So they're getting paid regardless. And
before Corona, you're getting a full stadium every single game.
Bizarre,
once or twice a week.
Yeah, I think a stadium like Emirates, they charge a lot of money. I think it's like £110 a ticket, and it's like £1,300 a season ticket. That's beyond, I think that's the highest in the UK. And yeah, they still fill out their stadium every single week.
Yeah, because that's because you have passionate fans, you have loyal fans who are gonna, they don't care about how much they have to pay because this is very important to them.
It's their life. They grew up watching that team. And I know I'm a Chelsea fan, but and on Arsenal being essentially my direct rival since I grew up watching the sport, but even that, like, I can't deny how big of a club they are. They're one of the biggest clubs in England. And the likes, I think, of Stan Kroenke and the Glazers. بعدهم بقى يجوا خلدون ورومان و... I think the day capitalism got married with the sport was the day we as fans got little by little disconnected from it. And every year that disconnection grows more and more. And the fact that they did this without asking the fans, and the fact that they did this, even I think, And this, bro, don't get me started on the statements that they released when they withdrew.
It's because like, no one wanted to withdraw, but so they couldn't. They knew that it would have a lot of trouble after, from the fans and from the media and just from the whole footballing world. If it kept going, it was going to be a big problem for them.
None of the big six teams had the word sorry in their statements. And I don't think any of the teams that withdrew had the word sorry in it.
It's because they weren't sorry.
They just wanted money.
They were forced to withdraw.
And the fact that you can't even lie to sympathize with your fans. And it's like, you're pretty much withdrawing because you're scared that when fans are back, they're going to turn on you. Just shows how much disgusted they are, and so I think I'm gonna get on my club, and I'll give you your opportunity to get on yours too. I think when the statement got out from Chelsea, they said, "Oh, after revision, we chose to withdraw because of the biggest interest of the sport and other clubs and our fans." So the fact that you went to this very, very big decision that shook the entire world, and you weren't even decisive, and you didn't know what the backlash was going to be, that's as bad, if not worse, than joining the Super League in the first, or joining or creating the Super League in the first place, because you just show how incompetent you are. You went into this, if you really went to this, like you say you did, without knowing on the facts, that makes me question you as a fan of what the fuck are you doing at your desk. I'm sorry if I'm getting emotional, but I'll give you your turn.
No, it's okay. It's understandable. I think a big point as well here is how quickly and how aggressively UEFA reacted to the news of the Super League. It was almost instant, the reply and the threats about how they're going to ban the players, how they're going to ban the clubs from competing in their domestic leagues, how they're going to ban the players from competing with their national teams. And it was right away, they even wasted a day just to come up with this. And it was constant, and it was every day they were coming out with different things, because they realized that this is going to be the end of UEFA, really, because no one is going to be interested in watching.
Exactly. I never saw Seferin talking when, what's his name? The Rangers player that got Kamara got racially abused. I didn't see a single fucking word from him.
Yeah, it's like Patrick Bamford said, they moved right away when it's someone hurting their pockets, but when it's the serious issues like racism or like, I don't know, anything, homophobia or something like that, then they
don't move because that actually makes more TV for them to watch,
and it doesn't hurt their pocket anyways. Mm-hmm. It's just gonna people are gonna talk, people are gonna say this and this. But at the end of the day, people are still watching and are still paying the money to be involved in this whole thing. UEFA are not trying to save football. Florentino Perez is not trying to save football. They're just trying to save the profits that they get every year from just the any
you're speechless. Using, I know.
Just from like using the passionate fans around the world that want to watch their clubs, that want to watch the sport that they love, and they're just using them to get more money, and they're doing it again with the new format of UEFA. They want to get more games in, they want to get more teams in, increase the revenue
for more TV, more money. Let's do it.
Yeah, and more big games and more injuries and more
not caring about if that player is a human being and is going to get tired, or not caring about not caring about that the format doesn't even make sense because it's not assess and divisible by eight. It's just a mess, and it makes me question everything. Like, I can't trust either now, I know a lot of Chelsea fans gave a lot of stick for Roman, and personally, I'll give him stick too. But I can't blame him because without Roman Abramovich, who knows what club I'll be supporting right now? And that's just a fact. But it just makes me have this existential crisis. Like, who do I trust at this point? Is it can my own club doesn't care about me? You know, watching the sport like that. If anything, people who are season ticket holders right now, they're a bother to the club. They don't care about the £900 you pay a season. They care about, and I think I told you this on the WhatsApp group chat, and we kind of had a bit of an argument on it. They care about people traveling from America and Asia and then going to the mega store right next door to the stadium. And all blued out, or in your case, redded out, and buying the merchandise, buying the memorabilia for thousands of dollars, buying the signed balls, and paying £110 for a ticket.
Yeah,
It's.
I can see this. I think my point was when you brought this up earlier is that the season ticket holders are always going to be there. They're consistent. Their consistent income that is, yes, they might not be paying the same amount of money as the tourists who come once or twice, and they pay £100 for the just to enter the stadium, and then they pay another 100 just to get a shirt. And whether they end up paying maybe even thousands of pounds on merchandise. But at the end of the day, these tourists are going to come once every now and then. But say your loyal fan base, your locals, your people who travel away just to watch the team, these people who are just always going to be there, they also spend a decent amount of money on buying the new shirts and buying the scarves and a lot of stuff like that. They're also going to pay money, maybe not as much as the tourists, but they're going to be there week in, week out, going to the games. They're going to be any new release that you get, like the new training jackets, these weird stuff that the clubs release. They're probably going to be on them as well because they're passionate fans or actually want to support the club. And that's something that you can never get with tourists, really. I think they're both very important parts when you look at income and revenue for the club, from the fans.
Let me just do this as a disclaimer. I am not against any of so what tourists or season ticket holder. I'm actually I've never been a season ticket holder, and I've never been to London. So
No, I think they're
I'm
both
not.
very important parts to
Yeah,
consider. They're the
absolutely.
two biggest they're the two biggest sections of the match day money, really, or whatever it's called. The people who come to the games, who attend the games, and they buy food, they buy merchandise, they buy whatever they buy, just on that specific day, just on the game day. And that's a big part of the money that the clubs make, especially bigger clubs with bigger stadiums like United, like Arsenal, like I don't know how big all the stadiums are, but any when you have an Old Trafford that has 73,000 or something like that seats, and they're being filled every game,
I think
and
82, isn't it? Old Trafford.
I think it's 73 or 74, but maybe I'm wrong. But anyways, yeah, it's a very big number. It's the biggest stadium in England after Wembley.
You're right. I think it's actually bigger than Wembley, or did Wembley get renewed?
I'm
I
pretty sure
think
Wembley is the biggest one. I think Old
Wembley's the
Trafford is
biggest,
second.
yeah. I think Old Trafford was the biggest after, and then once Wembley reopened, it was bigger.
I think Old Trafford was always like the biggest stadium for that actually belongs to a club. I'm not sure. I mean, but the point is, and then it's a lot of seats that you're filling every week, sometimes twice a week, and that's a massive amount of money that you're getting. And when Corona hit, and now there's no tickets and you're not getting fans coming in, that's when you really felt the effect of these people have the season tickets or even just buy regular tickets and come to games every week. That's when you have, that's when you feel the economic disaster really that happens. That's why teams are losing massive amounts of money, because the people are مثلا overseas. Like if you're a United fan, you live in South Korea, for example, you don't really go to the games, but you still buy the stuff online. You still buy the shirt or you buy something every season. That's not really gonna be out of the window. That's still gonna be there. But what you're gonna lose on is the people who actually come to the stadium and they pay the money and they pay for the ticket, and they always try to get something to remember the game by, like even something small, like a scarf or a match day pamphlet or whatever it is. These people are the people giving you the core revenue from your games. That was my point when we talked about it earlier, is you can't really, you can't survive without these fans, without match-going fans.
Let's move on, because we can keep talking for hours and we can get even more heated than we already are, even though it's been like 3 weeks since the topic was over. But let's talk European competitions. I know we thrive ourselves on being a Premier League podcast, but because last time we talked, it was after the first leg of the quarterfinals, and I think so. Let's review our predictions, because I think once the draw was made for the quarterfinals, we both said our predictions. I think mine. I said the Chelsea, Bayern, Real, and City. And I think you said City, Chelsea, PSG, and Liverpool. I think so, right?
No, I think I said Bayern, not PSG.
You said Bayern? Okay. So I was one off, you were two off. So at least we got the obvious ones correct. There were no really any surprises, was it?
There were a few ties that were kind of up in the air. I mean, it depends on what you're getting. Really, like Liverpool versus Madrid, you never know. It's both teams are kind of struggling, but the European competitions, it's not really based on anything. Just perform on the day, and I know that Liverpool, if they perform on the day, they can be very tough to face. Same with Real Madrid. I expected Liverpool to do a lot better than they did, obviously. They kind of lost it in the first game, the away game. But so they were nowhere near as good as I expected them to be. For Chelsea and Porto, I think there was an obvious favorite there.
Yeah, there was only one winner here.
Yeah, and City, Dortmund. Some people are expecting Dortmund to kind of pull off a surprise win and get past City. And it was actually quite close until the end of the second game, or like the last 30 minutes when City kind of pulled away with the away goals. But I think most people expected City to go through, because they kind of looked like the strongest team in Europe right now.
I think Dortmund made the judgment call too on their season. whether going to Signal Iduna Park and try to battle it out with Man City and try to reach a final where you're going to face PSG or Bayern, or perform well in the league and try to make the Champions League through the league.
I think they really gave it a good shot.
They gave it a good shot, yeah. But it's after that City goal, it just looked like a training session.
Yeah, which is yani, they were always the underdogs. No one expected them to get past City. I don't even think, like, maybe not even the biggest fans of Dortmund really expected them to get past City in its current form. But I think they can be yani. They can be proud of what they did. They conceded last minute in the first game. That made a pretty big difference. The second game, I believe they scored first. I think they scored first. They went 1-0.
Second game? Yeah. Jude Bellingham. Yeah. Scored an amazing goal.
Yeah. So at that point, it was really up in the air. And it was, they had the advantage on away goals. But against a team like City, very difficult to just defend. They kind of, they succumb to the pressure at eventually.
And City is nasty in attack too. You can tell, like, it's easy for Mahrez, it's easy for KDB.
They have a lot of
quality. Disgusting firepower.
And they are also very good at managing games. They don't panic, even if they go down. They're very patient, building up. They make it very difficult for you to even get a touch of the ball, and that's very frustrating to face. And
mm-hmm.
And obviously Pep is one of the greatest managers. He knows, and he knows what needs to be done. They've always had this one or two games per season where they kind of throw away their chance at even getting to the semi-final of the Champions League, especially with Pep. But I feel like this season they look more focused. They kind of wrapped up the Premier League already. This is the one thing that's missing from City's cabinet, really. It's just the Champions League. And if anyone's going to do that for you, it's going to be Guardiola, I think. I mean, they're in a good position right now. This is after the first leg of the semifinals. They went to PSG. They beat them 2-1. They're going back to the Etihad with a goal advantage and two away goals, which is huge. But it's really, it's really theirs to lose at this point. Not just the tie, but the whole tournament, because their side had the two toughest teams that they could have faced, and if they make it to the final, or as they should really at this point, they're facing either Chelsea or Real Madrid, and I think they should be beating them.
They shouldn't be tired either, because they're technically playing in one competition now.
Kind of, yeah, and they have a lot of squad depth anyway.
Oh,
they can play with the second team in the Premier League and they'll be fine. They'll still be winning games.
انت عندك حق جوارديولا ده يلعب لك مثلا فودن جول كيبر ويلعب لك زينشينكو راس حربة.
They're spoiled for options. Yeah. They're spoiled for options. Right now is the best chance they're ever going to get to win the Champions League. And I think if it would be a failure if they don't. Like, it's theirs to lose at this point.
I don't want to trust him, bro. Like, every fucking year, we say that. And I think last year, it was literally theirs to lose. Like, I think last year, it was even easier than this. You're facing Lyon, and you have an easy draw. Facing Lyon, and you're facing them in a one-game knockout. And at the time, Lyon was the seventh in Ligue 1. And they still bottled it. And at the time, they gave up on the League 2, so they weren't playing in the league. And the knockout tournament was after the season was over. And I just don't get how last season they didn't win it. There is no explanation, no possible explanation how last season they messed it up.
I don't know. Maybe it's maybe it's a psychological thing about like them and losing quarterfinals. Maybe they just don't believe that they can win it. I don't know. They don't have the experience really because they've never been in a semifinal with Guardiola before. And a lot of these players have never really been in the final or the semifinal of the Champions League. And if I guess maybe they got past that curse of the quarterfinal. And now they're in the semifinal. They look good. They look confident. They have an advantage, and they look quite likely to make it to the final. Obviously, the final is a whole different story. And if you come into the final, anything can happen, regardless exactly. of who's That's, playing.
I was just gonna tell you that the only two finals I've ever seen in Champions League that were complete blowouts. Were Liverpool Tottenham 2 years ago, and that was one of the worst finals I've ever seen, and Porto Monaco in 2004. Other than that, every single final we've seen year in year out, it was 50-50 on the day. Even Bayern PSG last year, they barely won 1-0, and it only took a small mistake. I wouldn't even say moment of brilliance from Coman because it wasn't. It was a small mistake from PSG defense. And Bayern didn't even look good. They didn't look like the Bayern. They were.
Finals are always going to be cagey. Teams are going to be... they're going to have the first thing they're going to think of is that I don't want to go down. Because if I go down by goal, it's going to be very tough. It's just one game. It's usually a bit more cagey, a bit more tactical, more defensive. And if Guardiola makes it there, I'll be interested to see how he deals with it, really, because he's never been in a final with City, and he hasn't been in a final for a long time now, I think.
Yeah.
Is he gonna be more defensive? Is he gonna be more cautious? Or is he just gonna play his normal way?
Is it 10 years without a final now? Yeah, 10 years.
I don't remember. I think it's been a while. 10
years. Yeah, 10 years. Last final was Barcelona-Man United.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, 3-1. Pedro and David Villa.
Okay. Well, yeah. It's been a while, so we'll see how he deals with it. If they make it, obviously, they can still lose. On the other side, Chelsea, Madrid.
Before we move on to Chelsea, I just want to say one point about the PSG tie. And I know a lot of people think this is like 75-25. I am disagreeing. And I'm not saying that because like I'm biased against Man City or anything. But PSG's home record has been abysmal this season. I think they lost like 9 games at home. They lost to Bayern at home. They lost to, wasn't it Barcelona? Was it 1-1? It was 1-1. Now Man City. PSG have been performing really, really well away from home. So I don't want anyone to discount PSG yet.
I don't think anyone is discounting PSG. I think it's just, they're in a position now where they're kind of playing into City's hands. They're going to their home stadium and City have a goal advantage. They have 2 away goals. It's going to be very frustrating to play against. We know how good they are at closing games out and managing games. They can just have possession all game. And PSG can do nothing about it. They have to press them. They have to attack them. And if they make even the slightest mistake, they're going to concede. It's not a good position to be in. The worst team you can be in this position with is City at this point. It's going to be a difficult task. But when you have Neymar and Mbappe...
I was just going to tell you that you can never discount a team that has Neymar and Mbappe.
You never know.
Yeah, exactly. So, let's talk on the other side of the bracket. I'm gonna say my opinion about the first leg. But before we talk about that, I just want to talk about Liverpool and Madrid. And I'm very proud of my prediction. So let me flex a little bit, if that's okay, because I know a lot of people picked Liverpool out of that side. I said no, and that really shows, the brilliance of the experience that Real Madrid squad has. And I feel like a lot of people oversaw that because Liverpool has such a good squad, even if there's like 8 players out, and the fact that they won the competition before. But going into this fixture, in my opinion, this shouldn't have been 3-1. It should have been like 4-5. Real Madrid was so good that game. They did not give Liverpool any room of breath whatsoever. Trent, a big mistake. And even with that mistake, I still think Trent was the best player on that Liverpool team. And that shows how poor they were, that the worst defensive player on that side was your best performer.
I think it's... Yanni. Madrid were good, but I think Liverpool were really bad. They didn't even give them a challenge. They gifted them a goal with Trent, and even the other two goals were pretty obvious mistakes.
They were outplayed in midfield like there's no tomorrow, bro. They did not have possession. They did not look to retrieve the ball well. It was just completely nullified pressing and counter pressing. Fabinho was getting pulled apart by Casemiro, and Cruz and Modric, man, oh, what a game they had!
Amazing game. I think the Madrid definitely. I think Liverpool were even lucky to get out with 3-1. They were lucky to get
that
way.
Should have been a lot more.
3-1 is kind of gave them some kind of a chance to still be in the tie. But from the first game and even the second game, I think Liverpool, I don't know, it's surprising how bad they've fallen off after last year, because I'm not sure if it's maybe a problem of confidence after the start that they had this year. I don't know if it's problems in the changing room, maybe problems with contracts, with Salah, with Wijnaldum. Obviously, the injuries played a big part. But even with the squad they have right now, the fit players that they have, I think they should not be getting these results. They should not be going to.
They're too good to be in this place. Seventh in the league. I mean, at the time we're talking, right? They could turn this season around and still finish top four, because this league is nuts this season. But currently, as we're speaking, they're like seventh or sixth in the league. By the looks of it, there is no Champions League next season. Got torn apart by as injured as they are a Real Madrid squad. Because here's the thing, Real Madrid are playing, I think, without 4 main players, I think.
So, that game they missed Ferran, Ramos.
Ferran Mendy wasn't playing as well, I think.
I think Mendy was playing. I think Valverde wasn't playing in the first game.
Carvajal was out too. I think Carvajal and Odriozola were both out, so they weren't playing with a true right back. Varane and Ramos were out, and Hazard was out, Nat Phillips had a horror show. I mean, you can't really blame him, because the first game in the Champions League you ever play for Liverpool is against Real Madrid. I mean. Bless him, but still, they're too good to be in this place.
I think so too, but it's kind of like a snowball effect, really. You start with getting the big injuries, and then you try to recover. You get a couple of good results, and then the first bad result that comes in, it just kind of keeps going. They lost, I think, 5 games in a row in Anfield. They're dropping points every game.
6 in a row.
Yeah, and they're losing to teams like Brighton, Burnley, drawn to Newcastle.
They lost to Fulham at home, a team that's getting relegated.
Yeah, Fulham as well. Fayani, it's a big surprise for me, even with the injuries. But I guess, Yani, it's a tough position to be in for Klopp, Yani, because I feel like he can't really control his players.
Yeah, as I think he's beyond safe at his job. There's no doubt in his job security. But I think people are just blinded away by how all factors are going wrong for Liverpool. Thiago not settling in well. Diego Jota coming back from injury, barely performing well. Firmino performing terribly. Sadio Mane completely out of it this season. I think he has as many goals as Timo Werner this season in the league. And the only saving grace for him is Mohamed Salah, who is actually, from what we know and from the back papers and from what we're reading, is causing issues in the dressing room. So psychological factor.
Even Salah has been scoring goals, but I don't think he's been performing nearly as well as the last.
I mean, he's the league's top goal scorer. So we can't say he's not doing well and he scored 22 goals in the league this season.
22?
I think so. Yeah, he passed Harry Kane.
Okay. No, he's been like the only bright spot, really, because at least he can deliver the goals, even if he's not performing as well as he used to. But he's still giving you some important goals. I think Klopp also made some questionable decisions with his team selection, with his substitutes. He cost them some games as well, in my opinion, at least. I think it's hard to blame him, because it's not entirely his fault. But I don't think he managed it as well as he could have. I think he could have managed it a bit better. Could have managed some important games a bit better. He could have avoided dropping points, important points in the league. The first game, the Madrid tie, the starting lineup was very confusing to me. Naby Keita starting.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
He was horrible that game. Him and Fabinho.
Yeah, and I don't know, Nat Phillips and Kabak really against a very experienced attack.
I mean, I think Kabak did well, actually. I'm not going to get on him too much, but Nat Phillips was horrible.
I think the three goals that they conceded could have been avoided. The second goal, Trent's mistake, obvious mistake. Even the first goal, I think it's a combination of Trent not following his player and Nat Phillips not being aware of the player being behind him. Could have been easily avoided. It's not really a mistake that you can make at this level.
I think we need to take a step back and look at how bad Trent has been this season.
He has been pretty bad. He had some good games where people are like, okay, now he's back, but then the next game he doesn't perform.
He's on his Marcos Alonso syndrome right now. Hello. And I'm sorry if I'm making everything Chelsea oriented, but it's the perfect description for him.
I think it's just he's after the season that he had him and Robertson.
He can't top it, I think. But how poor he's been, especially in big games. Like, I'm trying to look back, and every goal I've seen Liverpool concede this season is from that right-hand side. That right-hand side has been terrible for them. I remember Mason Mount goal, the Vinicius Jr. goal, two goals. He really has to be put into question now, isn't he?
Defensively, he's always been suspect, really. But because of how dominant Liverpool were and because of having Van Dijk and Joe Gomez behind him with the pace and just the recovery they can get, it kind of all worked out really. I think he definitely needs to work on his defending and his awareness defensively, because it's a constant problem for Liverpool.
He's young, and I think he will come back from this easily. I feel like not a lot of people are giving him stick this season, but I will. He's been complete liability this season, especially for
the
defense.
I think a lot of people are seeing how bad of a season he's having, but people are kind of letting it go because of how good of a season he had last season, how good of a, well, the two seasons
and,
he had.
And the season before, obviously.
So people are letting it go kind of like, we know that he has a lot of quality, he's just in bad form right now. But I'm not sure if that's the case, really. I'm not sure if he's ever gonna recover that form, because that form depended on him being attacking and offensively with assists, and we've seen it.
We've seen it with the England squad, don't we?
Hasn't been picked.
Kieran Trippier and Reece James
point,
over him.
At this point, I'm not sure if he's gonna make it to the Euros. Really,
I think he will. I think he will. But I don't think he will feature. I don't think he will start. First of all, Gaza plays 3-4-3 or 3-4-2 or sorry 3-5-2, so he likes that wing back role, and that is.
I think Reece James has been playing in a back five.
And that's what Gaza is playing, isn't he?
No, I know, but I'm saying that Reece James have been playing a back five with his club, so he's more familiar with the role.
He might prioritize Reece. I personally think Aaron Wan-Bissaka has a chance.
I think he should. He should have a. He's been.
Gaza doesn't really rate him, from what we know.
I think he wants someone who is more balanced than Wan-Bissaka. I think Wan-Bissaka improved his attacking quite a lot this season. But I think he's not on the level that maybe Southgate wants from his wing back, especially from a wing back, not just a right back. I don't see Aaron Wan-Bissaka getting picked. I think Reece James will definitely be there.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe he takes Trent.
Aaron Wan-Bissaka has only missed like two league games this season.
He plays every single game.
Yeah, he doesn't.
There's no alternative really for him.
And never gets subbed out. And he's brilliant. When I watch him. And he fits so well with United, and we're gonna talk about United when we talk about the Europa League. But see, he fits so well, such an underrated player this season that not a lot of people are giving him credit. He's been brilliant.
I think
him
defensively, he's spot on. I mean, defensively, you can't ask for anything more.
But you don't need any. We have Rashford and Greenwood and Bruno and Pogba.
I think even when he's attacking this season, I think I've seen massive improvement in his attacking this season. And it was mostly a problem, not with the final third or the first third. It was usually in the middle of the pitch, the first time passes, the quick pass and move. That's what he lacked mostly.
Yes.
But he's improved that a lot. He's been very composed this season when he gets the ball. And he hasn't been panicking. He hasn't been making bad passes. His dribbling has improved a lot. He started off as a winger, so expect him to be. He's kind of a one-dimensional dribbler, kind of like reminds me of Valencia a bit.
But that's all you need as a classic, no nonsense fullback.
Yeah, as a right back, really. And you don't need much. You just need to get the ball on your right foot and just get across. And he's quite quick.
Especially in United. In United, you don't need to play long ball. You don't need to play long passes. You don't need to cross. That's not the tactics. That's why I'm saying he fits so well in that system.
And I think people also don't realize that we haven't had a right winger in a long time. We're forcing Greenwood there. We're very dependent on our left side, with whether it's Rashford, whether it's Martial or whoever it is. Even Bruno, when he floats around, he floats towards the left. It's kind of unfair to judge him solely based on that. But even though it's obvious that he is not as good offensively as he is defensively, I think he has improved tremendously this season.
Yes. Okay. Let's move on and talk about Chelsea. Taban, Porto is kind of a given, right? We're not going to spend too much time on it. They did what they had to do they did what they had to do with Porto to get past them with as minimal effort as they could to focus also on top four race. And let's talk about that Alfredo Stefano game. I think it was pretty interesting, wasn't it?
I think it was very much in Chelsea's favor. I mean,
it was result. Opportunity missed, I think.
I think they could have
finished them off. Yeah, like in the first 30 minutes. They could have
went back
minutes.
With a win. Mm-hmm. I think I don't remember really any major chances other than the goal which came from a cross
and shorted Benzema اللي جت في العارضة.
Yeah, that was a decent chance, I guess.
And this is why what I'm saying, I'm favoring Real Madrid here. And this just shows how brilliant Real Madrid are. أديك شفته. You just said it. من فرصة ونص بالضبط. Let's say a chance and a half all game, yet they still scored. It's that experience that they have, and also the fact that Valverde, Ramos, and Mendy are coming back. I feel like Zidane will go home after this first leg and say, man, we got away with that one. And he got the tactics completely wrong in the first half an hour. He got the formation completely, completely wrong, especially Marcelo playing him as a complete wing back and leaving Nacho over people behind him. It's mind-boggling, and I think that was probably Chelsea's best attacking performance probably this season. I think maybe Crystal Palace comes second when they went 3-0 up in the first half an hour, but they were brilliant.
I think they were Chelsea were yani, I think Tuchel really did well from a tactical point of view. He read the game very well.
Spot on. Oh.
And they created a lot of chances where they didn't really. The last pass wasn't right, and I think that's a big issue with Chelsea's attack. Yeah. And they usually create the space. They do it very well in the build up. The 1-2 passes, the quick passing, pass and goal, and Conte has seen a lot of space that game.
He feasted on that midfield, didn't he?
Yeah, the last pass was always just not there. Just issue. not the best.
Last pass and fuck me, finish. Werner.
Obviously, and even when you get the last pass, yeah, Werner missed the sitter pretty much.
Man.
But I think that's been Chelsea's main issue with Lampard, with Tuchel. I think they do very well. They build up very well. They create a lot of space. They create a lot of opportunities to get chances, but they don't pick the right pass in vain, or maybe they don't execute the pass properly.
Kind of embarrassing, isn't it? لما تصرف 250 million on attack, and you still can't finish your dinner.
I guess, but at least that's fixable. That's something that they can. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean.
I think it is fixable. I think it's mostly decision making. I don't know what it is,
but we've had a lot of strikers since Drogba left.
I don't think it's just Werner's problem. I think it's a problem with the team collectively. Mm-hmm. I think Werner has had problems with finishing and confidence problems. But I think just the decisions that are being made in the final third are just not the right decisions. And I think
that comes with the lack of experience and how young the team is too.
And that can be coached, I think. That can be managed from Tuchel's point of view. I think after the season is done, and the break between the two seasons, however long that's going to be, I think he can look back at the footage and look back at the chances. I think the players can look back at them and think, these are easy chances that we have to score. There are a lot of easy chances that we missed, not just because of the finishes, but even just because of the decisions we made before that. Just that if we made the right decision, that would be a guaranteed goal, pretty much. And I feel like that's a common theme with Chelsea games. That's a problem, really, because they create a lot of opportunities, but they don't score as much as they should. I think that's at least something to be optimistic about from as a Chelsea fan, maybe. That's something that can be fixed, at least. It's not a problem that's unfixable.
أنا عايز أسألك سؤال. دلوقتي أنت شايف, because I know we talked about this briefly on the group chat too. You're saying in Chelsea and City are gonna make the final, right?
Yeah.
طب أنا I know City is pretty much 75% justifiable. But what is your confidence in that Chelsea team that they couldn't finish off a dismantled, to say it in the nicest way possible, Real Madrid team? And they're able to do that in London when their main players come back?
I think it's not fully just confidence in Chelsea. I think it's mostly just the lack of confidence in Madrid. Because, yes, they were good against Liverpool. Liverpool had a horrific game. Horrific two games, really. Even the second game, they didn't push as nearly as much as they needed to. I feel like that wasn't really a challenge for Madrid. With their midfield of Kroos and Modric and Casemiro, now Madrid have to score. And now Madrid have to push and press. And now Chelsea is going to get even more spaces. And watching Chelsea every week with Tuchel, they improved dramatically at just keeping the ball and moving the ball quickly and getting out of tight spaces and not needing to just hoof the ball forward and hope for the best. That's been a big change in that Chelsea team. And I think when you're playing against Modric and Kroos in midfield, who are obviously world-class players, but they're not as quick as they used to be. They don't have the stamina, they don't have the physicality that they used to have. When you're playing with a midfield that is very dynamic, very quick, like Kovacic, Kante, Mount, players who can move, they're going to give them a lot of problems. They're going to find the pockets of space in between them. And even with today's game, this is just after the Fulham-Chelsea game, it looks like Werner has been kind of starting to click with Havertz. I think Havertz still has a while to go, but I think Werner.
So it's funny. Havertz has as many league goals as Werner in the league this season.
Yeah, but looking at it, I think Werner created two very good chances. One that was scored by Havertz, and one that Ziyech missed. And I think he's kind of starting to get back to it. Even some of his finishes, maybe he hasn't scored, but he hasn't been missing as horrendously as he used to. At least he's getting his shots on target. He's testing the keepers. And I think he will score against Madrid next game. I think he'll have a good game. I think whether he starts with Pulisic
or Werner.
Whether he starts with Pulisic or Ziyech or Havertz or Giroud, I don't know. But I think they'll have a field day, really, against a Madrid team that has to push and doesn't have the pace in midfield or the youth in midfield to be able to deal with Mount or Kovacic or Kante or Jorginho or whoever is playing. Just Kante and Mount by themselves, they gave them a lot of problems in the first game. And I think it will be the same thing. I think Chelsea will score to make it difficult for Madrid. And that's not because of, yes, Chelsea, I do think Chelsea are a good team. I think they've been playing very well. But I think Madrid are just not there. I think they've been lucky to reach this point of the competition. And Chelsea kind of got lucky with the draw that they don't have to face any of the massive teams before the final, at least. So I think it's Chelsea's to lose. I think they're the favorites at this point after the first game. I wouldn't bet money on it, really, because it can go either way. But if I have to give the edge to a team, it would have to be Chelsea, just because of what I saw in the first game, and because of the result they brought back.
انا بصراحه انت غيرت رايي يعني you swayed me a bit. I think it's like a 55-45 chance for Chelsea. My only argument is that can you hold up that Madrid team for not scoring at home? And I don't know.
I think you can. I think they shouldn't really have scored in the first game. Yani, when you concede, when you have a team that is good with set pieces, you're playing with five defenders, and you don't just lose the first ball, you lose the second ball and the third ball in your own box. So it's, yani, these are mistakes and that shouldn't be happening at this level.
But Chelsea couldn't pounce on him, though. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, they couldn't, but they should have. Like they made should've. The chances. So. But I think it's going to be a bit less pressure in the second game because Chelsea know that they have the advantage that they don't really need to score. And the Madrid, they know that they have to push. They have to find a way to score regardless of. So as long as the game stays at 0-0, Madrid are going to have to push a lot more. Werner is going to find the space in behind, and that's what he excels in.
He does really well against high-line teams.
And I don't know if Ramos is going to catch the game or not. But
I think it's doubtful, but for sure, Mendy and Valverde are coming back.
Okay, so I'm going to assume it's going to be Varane and Militao at the back.
Militao was brilliant, to be honest, in the first leg. I thought he was the best Real Madrid player.
Yeah, he's been good, I think, for a few games now for Madrid, even in the league. He scored today. He just scored
yes.
For them to win. But anyways, I think they do have the pace, but I feel like they don't have the experience to understand where to be and if they're playing such a high line, which I expect them to. They're going to leave a lot of space in behind them, and I think they won't be able to recover. I think it's in Chelsea's hands to lose, really, because I know they're going to create chances. They're going to create good chances. It's whether they take it or not. And I know you shouldn't really be confident with an attack that consists of Werner and Havertz and players that are not really known for their finishing abilities, at least at this point. But I think they will score. I think that's going to make it very difficult for Madrid to come back.
So you're saying City to go through?
Yes.
Who's your winner?
It has to be City. I have to bet on someone.
Yeah. Like, would you put a lot of money on City winning? Or you see a scenario where Chelsea clinches it?
I think there's always a scenario where Chelsea clinches it because, as we said, it's a final. And
there's always going to be 50-50, yeah.
Yeah, it's... as if I would put at least 100 bucks on City.
What do you think City's weakness is? What do you think is the teams that give them the most hard time?
I think they're the teams that kind of like Chelsea, the teams who are capable of getting out of the high press.
Yeah, I was just going to say, sorry to interrupt, you can go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was just going to say, like, the teams that are capable of getting out of the press, teams are comfortable with the ball. Other teams, if you play defensively, yes, you can kind of hold on for a while, like Spurs did, but eventually you're going to break. And if I feel like the best way to face City is to anticipate their press, their heavy high line press, and just work on the spacing behind. Just get the ball. If you're Chelsea, for example, just try to get the ball out to Mount, try to make Werner make that run in behind Diaz or Stones, and that's when you're gonna find joy. And they don't have a lot of pace at the back, and
I feel like that's how they broke them down in the FA Cup too. I don't know if you watched that game or no.
I believe I did, yes. They were patient. They were composed. They kept hold of the ball pretty well against a team like City.
That loves the ball. Yeah, City loves having the ball.
Yes, they took their chance and they slept on it.
Here's the thing: if we reach the final, I have to back up my team, bro. Not necessarily on psyche, or not necessarily on any logical basis, just necessarily out of Telhis.
No, obviously, yani, your team is in the final. That's the, yani, if you're not gonna support your team, then who are you gonna support?
Not necessarily supporting. Of course, I'm gonna support my team, but I can see them
into existence.
Here's the thing. Yeah, Chelsea, historically speaking, always performs well when they're underdogs.
That's true.
Yeah, so going into this tie, being huge underdogs, you know, it's one game away from glory. And if the scenario I think Rebecca Lowe in NBC Sports said it today. If they win the Champions League and they win the FA Cup and finish fourth or third, that's their best ever season.
Oh, just winning the Champions League, I think it would be difficult to argue that's not their best ever season. Mm-hmm. Even the last time they won the Champions League, it was not the greatest season outside the Champions League, but
FA Cup that year. But they finished sixth in the league. Yeah.
They weren't playing nearly as good as they are now. And now I think there is a lot to look forward to. There's an obvious, a clear path that the team is looking to have under Tuchel, and he's gonna have his transfer window. We'll see what happens. Maybe any. If I'm a Chelsea fan, I'd be backing Tuchel. I'd have confidence in him. I trust him to make the right calls.
Even if Tuchel loses all games remaining in the season, he's renewing for sure after what he's done to the club.
I think it's enough that just to see that at least he has a plan. He knows what he's doing.
And
he changed the system overnight. They've been solid defensively. Solid midfield has been. Since he came, their midfield has been one of the best in the league. It's just the attack, really, at this point that needs some tweaking. But I think that's something that he can fix.
Okay, let's drift on to Europa League. Fam, you want to talk about Arsenal or you want to talk about United?
We can start with Arsenal.
Shit performance, man. what a horror display.
I think the result is actually a lot better than it should have been. They went 2-0 down.
Emery, I think Unai made a mistake of taking off their attacker and putting on Coquelin to defend. I think that's the mistake he's done. But I want to talk about how wrong Arteta got it. Here's the thing. I don't think I've ever seen Arsenal play a false nine. Ever. What's he doing?
I'm not really sure why he keeps rotating. I understand that it's been difficult. Obviously, losing Tierney has been one of, if not their best player this season.
Bukayo played last season as a left wing back the whole season. And when he was taken to England, he played all his caps as a left wing back. Why are you sticking Xhaka there? I don't get it. It does not make sense.
I mean,
one of the stiffest players I've ever seen. You're playing him as a left back? Just because he's left footed? I don't get it. This was a horror display. I think
it was a very bad performance. I think result-wise, it's actually not even that bad.
It's not bad, Khalis. They can finish it off at the Emirates 1-0. And when you have someone like Aubameyang or Lacazette, this is very, very possible scenario. But with a performance like that, You gotta put Mikel Arteta into question now. I mean, I've been saying it a lot, and a lot of people have been getting on me for that. Is Mikel Arteta the right man for the job after this? If it, let's say he gets knocked out of the Europa League, and they've messed it pretty bad. They've messed it up pretty bad in the league. I think the highest they can finish is like 7th or 8th. So, no, you know Europe next season if they win the Europa, if they don't win the Europa League. What's next? Laka is not getting any younger. Aubameyang is not getting any younger. Got players like Willian, players like Cedric and Pablo Mari, Matty Ryan. They're not getting any, and Louise, they're not getting any younger. I don't know, man. It looks bleak for Arsenal.
It doesn't look great for Arsenal, but at the same time, I think you need you can't really let Arteta go at this point. Yes, he hasn't been consistent enough. Yes, he hasn't been doing well enough with the performances. Been inconsistent performances, inconsistent results. But at the same time, he's getting familiar with the club, with his players. He's had a lot of injury problems with a team that is, a squad that is already not really that, that deep or has that much quality. I guess, if I have to make the decision of keeping him or letting him go, I would keep him personally, and give him another transfer window. Let him.
Who's gonna come if they're out of Europe?
I'm not sure, to be honest, but I think they can make some.
Listen, whom are you gonna recruit? Because all top six teams are gonna be in Europe next season, even if Liverpool and like Europa Conference League, whatever the fuck you call it.
I think, and you can look at the relegated teams. There are a few good players there that they can use. They can make some savvy deals. Not going to be that expensive, and players that are not really coming from top clubs. I think they can find some decent players that they can recruit. It's going to be tough convincing.
It's not looking great, man, I must say. I mean, I think you're a bit lenient. I disagree a little bit.
No, I am lenient, but at the same time, when Arteta took over, they weren't really in the best place either. He didn't really... I don't think he made them worse. I would argue he made them a bit better. It's difficult to argue for Arteta staying. But also, I don't see anyone that they can get at this point that's going to fix this. No one's going to fix this overnight. This is a big project. It's going to take a lot of time.
I mean, Allegri has been out of management for 2 years. He's eager to get a job.
But Allegri's style doesn't really fit the Arsenal style. I don't think that's what they want.
I'm gonna be honest, and maybe I'm very harsh with saying that, but I look at this Arsenal team. Okay, let's say they gave up on the league, right? And that Fulham game was a bit of a let off, and that Everton game was a bit of a let off. Although they were very, very, very poor performing. If I'm an Arsenal fan, I'll be very, very concerned watching my team play like that. But let's go to when it mattered, right? At Villarreal, at Ceramica, right? What is there to look forward to?
But at the same time, the last, when they played Slavia Prague, second game, they were under a lot of pressure after the 1-1 the first game. They went there, they got...
You can always say, we can Bardo say that there was a lot of pressure on Slavia Praha because of that racism thing, and a lot of people were giving them stick, beside the ban that their, I think, first choice center back got like 10 games. So you can...
I understand that it's not really an achievement.
To beat Slavia Praha 4-1, that's not an achievement, Saraha, in my opinion.
Yes, that performance was at least a sneak peek of what this team is capable of. I think it's not just the result. Performance-wise, they were dominant. They created chances even more than the 4 goals they scored. And they were clinical in front of goal. Scored some really nice goals. the build-up was there, the composure in the defending was there. Against Villarreal, yes, they didn't play well, but considering that they went down 2-0 the first 30 minutes, they got a red card in the beginning of the second half, and they still got away with a 2-1 away from home.
Penalty, that's not a penalty.
Obviously, they got very lucky with the penalty. It should never have been a penalty. But they got it, and now they go back to the Emirates with a one-goal deficit, with an away goal. It's very doable for them, I think. And I think they'll make it. Actually, I think they'll make it to the final.
Me too. I think they'll make it, and I'm not saying that to say that they would not make it. I'm saying that because of what's next. Because if they face Man United, with Rob Holding and Pablo Mari in defense, man.
Well, again, it's a final. You never know. They beat us already this season.
But they beat you, but not with Xhaka at left back, and facing directly Greenwood.
It's circumstances. Yes, form matters and everything. But when it comes to a final, it's just how you perform on the day. And with United, we haven't been to a final since Mourinho's days. And these players lack that experience, Danny. They're not. Yes, obviously, have some players who have some good experience, like the Pogba, like Rashford. They've been there, like Maguire. Matic doesn't really Luke play. Shaw. But, yeah, he can provide something. Luke Shaw, yes. These are all still kind of like youngish players, but at least they reached some kind of. And I think obviously obvious favorites are Man United.
Yeah, they're like 80%.
But you never know. Again, it's a final. Anything can happen. We haven't beaten Arsenal, I think, in a couple of years now. I'm not someone who's usually pessimistic about or like.
I feel like you're a bit pessimistic right now. I see no chance of Arsenal winning this tournament. I'm just going to be honest. I see them making the final, and that's my prediction. I think they'll make the final. I think they'll get smoked out of the water from how good Man United is. And with that, let's go to Man United's game at Old Trafford. فرق السام العمى يعني بجد يعني أنا فرق الماتشين دول. You can see the difference. I was watching. I was doing like I have two screen setups. So I was watching the Man United game, and I was watching the Arsenal game. You couldn't even blink at the Man United game. There was always shit happening.
I think it started off with us scoring an early goal.
Yeah,
it kind of settled our nerves a bit because I was worried that it might stay 0-0 and.
You were trailing at one point.
They were going to make it tough for us. Yes, the first half, we actually went the first half 2-1 down. Two incredibly stupid goals to concede. A penalty that I don't think should have been a penalty.
It shouldn't have been a penalty, no.
And the second goal was, an obvious lack of concentration. Should never be happening, really. Schoolboy errors, like Ole said.
Yeah, exactly. That's the error that Maguire and Lindelof have been making all season.
I think this one is definitely on Lindelof. It was on Lindelof's side, and I think you can argue that Shaw and Maguire should have stepped up a bit and made stayed up with the line. But I don't think Lindelof should be committing to that ball.
Geez, what Dzeko is all about. You know what he's trying to do. I mean,
Dzeko didn't really do anything. Actually, if you look at the replay. He missed it and then it hit him.
Yeah, exactly.
He missed and then it hit his other leg. But yeah, and it's a kind of chicharito to finish. You gave them a way back into the game. You gave them two goals. Misha, I can argue the first one wasn't really. I can't really blame our defense for it. But we should have dealt with it from the beginning. But anyways. Now you look at the response in the second half, and that's as good as it can be. You go out in the second half, you score in the first 2-3 minutes. So now it's you're settled now. You're not prolonging the the time where you're not giving Roma the confidence that they can actually win this game. And then from that point onwards, it was just constant pressure and constant attacking. And that's something I've been wanting to see from United. Because I know that we're a much better team than Roma. And they have a lot of injuries as well. Absolutely. And even without the injuries, they're nowhere near good as we are. Quality-wise, just form-wise, anything. There's an obvious favorite here. I'm very happy with the performance, especially in the second half. Even in the first half, before we conceded, or other than the duels we conceded, I think we were good. But the second half, that was some of the best football I've seen from United.
Yeah.
In a few years, really. Not just the scoring and everything, the movement on the ball and off the ball, the passing, the build up, the composure, the clinical finishing. Everything was just on point. Obviously, Cavani played a big part in that. Yeah, he's a clinical finisher that we haven't had in a while at United. Bruno had an amazing game. I think he scored 2 and assisted 2, if I'm not mistaken. But everyone was just there. Pogba, Fred.
Everybody turned up. Yeah, when it mattered. You don't know what Ollie said at halftime, but it clicked. It's like a switch.
Prime Alex Ferguson team talk.
And here's the thing. That's what I'm saying that Arsenal doesn't have and will never have with Arteta. Arteta doesn't have a good man management. Arteta pretty much went to a player like Saliba and a player like Guendouzi and a player like Ozil telling them their shit in their face. Yes, Arteta has his positives and Arteta is I think he's done okay so far. But looking at this right now, I see no scenario of Arsenal winning the Europa League. And maybe this will come back to bite me, as always. Because what I say always happens the opposite. But there is no one in the right frame of mind that would say Arsenal is the favorites. Or put money on Arsenal winning.
I agree. They're huge underdogs. And I think obvious favorites are Man United. And I expect us to win.
Martin? Button. Anna, I'm saying that there is no one in the right frame of mind that will say that Arsenal have like a realistic chance of winning unless something unrealistic happens.
And I completely agree. I think obvious favorites are United. Obvious underdogs, huge underdogs are Arsenal. It's a final, so I can't really discount anyone. If I have to put money, or if anyone really has to put money on it, it would be United 100%. It should be an expectation for us to win. It should not be anything less than that. Out of the 4 teams that made it to the semifinal, I think United are head and shoulders above
any
other
team.
3 teams.
Any team, yes.
I would like us to be more ambitious and I would like us to be in this spot, but in the Champions League in the near future. But I think this is a step in the right direction. It's a good step. It shows that we're capable of doing that even in a semifinal where we've been, I guess, a quote-unquote cursed with semifinals with Solskjaer. This is a big step. There was a lot of pressure on this game. And obviously, the tie is not done, but it's practically 99% done.
I don't think you'll lose 4-0.
It's just that I remember the Liverpool-Roma game and the away game, and they actually came back. I remember Roma-Barcelona, so you never know. I don't wanna jump the gun here.
Roma, generally speaking, is not doing well. They're 7th in the league with like 7 points away, so they're most probably not gonna play in Europe next season. Fonseca hasn't been doing well this season. A lot of players of them are out. I think two main players got injured in that game.
three actually. They made three injury substitutions in the first half.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't think they will win 4-0 at Stadio Olimpico with no fans. I don't think that will happen.
No, I think it would take a complete meltdown for us to lose this tie. But see, oh. I'm assuming that we're gonna go through. Hopefully, that's not a false assumption. I expect nothing less than for us to win this competition. That was the expectation from the beginning of the season, or from when we went down to the Europa League. And I think this is at least it shows that Solskjaer can be trusted and backed by the board. And hopefully they do that in the summer, and they bring him the players that he needs. And obvious need for a right winger. He's been there for a while.
Yes.
My dream signing was obviously be Haaland, but I don't see that happening. So I'm hoping.
You say Sancho? Yeah.
I'm hoping for Sancho, and I'm hoping that they can have a good window, and the board can back Solskjaer, and we can move from here to the Champions League and competing in the Champions League, because I think this is the perfect time, really.
So you think it's gonna be a Manchester derby in the Super?
I think so. Yes.
Yeah, I don't think that ever happened, didn't it? Yeah, I don't think it. Yes, no, it did with Atletico and Real Madrid before. When Atletico kisbu
Atletico won the Europa League.
Falcao. Yeah. La mish Falcao. That can 20. I think 2018. When Atletico won against Arsenal and then won against Marseille in the final, and then met Real Madrid. Yeah, I think, but I think that would be the second time that ever happened that there's a derby in the Super Cup final. I think it's the same too. I don't see. It's tough to visualize anyone winning this competition other than United, especially if Arsenal goes through. If Villarreal goes through, I think that's the type of teams that give United a hard time. The low block teams that distribute the ball well, these are the type of, and I've been seeing this as a recurring theme this season for United. If Villarreal goes through, I'd still say it's like a 70-30% chance for United to win.
I still expect us to beat either Villarreal or Arsenal. I think I would still expect us to win.
Yeah, here's the thing. I think if you meet Arsenal, you completely blow them out. If you meet Villarreal, then at least we have a game on our hands. You're still the favorites either way. There's no escape from that. This is an expectation to win this competition now.
Fair point.
Actually, do you have any last words you want to say?
Hopefully we'll get a trophy for United soon. Everyone is listening to this, please pray for us, because I need the trophy.
Pray for him, guys. He needs the trophy. You heard the man. Thank you so much, Martin, for tuning with me.
Thank you for having me.
And whoever is listening to this at the time we're recording, it's the day right before Eastern Easter. And I think that's the one me and Martin celebrate, actually. So happy Easter to everyone who's celebrating it tomorrow. Martin, happy Easter to you.
Happy Easter to you as well.
Thank you, Habib. And we'll see you guys in the next episode. Hopefully, it won't take that long. Martin, do you want to record after the second leg?
If we win, yeah.
Champions League, though. I mean, there's no way you won't win the second leg. Or you might not win in the scoreline, but there's no way you're not going to get past. I don't see any chance.
I've been hurt before way too many times.
Yep, this season especially. All right, thank you again, Martin. We'll see you guys in the next episode. Bye-bye.